Great. I'm just going to. My presentation is really dealing more with the data side of things. My background is that of an injury epidemiologist, and I was dragged, I won't say kicking and screaming, but one of my doctoral students, Marie-Claude Lavoie, who's in the room here, who said she wanted to do a thesis on evaluation of a health law or a health policy. And so this is my entry into the whole area of evaluation and public health law. And it's also very interesting because I was asked to, there was a proposal that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation put out to evaluate laws with regard to marijuana-related driving. And I sort of took the provocative view of an epidemiologist and said, you can't do this right now because we don't have the good data to be able to do this. And so essentially that's the basis of my talk and pushing for the need in the similar way the law program has developed these databases. We need to develop the infrastructure to be able to do this, and we just don't have it right now. And that's part of the theme. They then turned around and gave me a consolation prize and asked me to prepare a policy paper on this whole issue and how we can just show you that we really need to develop the data side of these things. So just a little bit of background. Driving under the influence of many drugs increases the risk of motor vehicle crashes. There's been an increasing number of studies coming out showing how much of a problem this is. It's becoming much more of a priority issue. It's become an issue of the President's Office of Drug Control. And there's a lot more interest in this whole issue. And there's a lot of stuff out there saying drugs and driving are bad thing. We've ignored this. We've got this alcohol problem. We've had some real success stories with that. We have plateaued a little, but is it the same thing, and can we just apply the same approaches to this issue? And I think those are some of the issues that I've been interested in trying to explore and to look at. And the basic issue is that these marijuana laws and legal penalties can influence marijuana use and drug-impaired driving. But then the issue came down, how do we evaluate? And I thought this was a tremendous opportunity to put in a proposal, but I wanted to share with you some of the issues and how this is key to being able to develop the laws. And the reason we're able to do such a lot of stuff with the alcohol laws, as Alex illustrated so very well, is that we set up a national data system. We set up FARS. We had good testing rates, and then we estimated when we didn't do it. So that's going to be part of my theme as I push you through this. So basically, the laws regarding marijuana use are changing rapidly, and that's even more so why we need to develop this good data system behind this. 1996, California started, and as of 2013, there are now 20 states in the District of Columbia. And also, there's this big push for marijuana legalization. So what effect are these laws going to have on public health? In particular, my interest is in the area of injury epidemiology and substance abuse and injury epidemiology. And basically, of course, we're likely to see an increased use in these drugs as a result of the legalization efforts. But what effect are these having on drug-impaired driving? And then the real issue, which I sought to answer, was how could we actually evaluate these effects? So part of my putting this together in this paper is to examine all the methods available that we could use for evaluating the effect of laws related to marijuana use. Essentially, by reviewing the availability of the data sources on marijuana use and impaired driving in particular. So the issue is marijuana and driving, not just marijuana use in the community. But and so there are two main approaches that I took, was looking at surveys of actual use of marijuana, in particular related to driving, and then objective data, which is an epidemiologist. They always like to have measurable levels, and actually was the drug there, and that's going to be something we're going to talk a little bit about as well. And then can we actually use these data systems? Do they just give point prevalence surveys, or can we actually use them to evaluate trends? So one of the surveys that has been widely used is a youth risk behaviour survey, and this is a survey of school students conducted annually at the state level, and also there are national estimates available. But it only asks about general marijuana use. And taking a particular look at the questions, during the past 30 days, how many times did you use marijuana? And they don't specifically relate use to driving. But as I was putting this together, Alex shared a paper that Lynn Lensman has been doing, and it then since came out in the American Journal of Public Health, where she found no effect of the marijuana laws on 30-day use. But the secret here is we had state-level data, and that's the issue that comes out as you'll hear me going through this. So monitoring the future survey has been a major survey funded for many years on drug use. It's high school seniors, 12th grade is the group that particularly we're interested in. It's a nationally representative sample. And they produce a lot of reports, and this is one of the major monitoring in youth that we use to monitor drug use. Driving after marijuana and other illicit drugs is asked specifically, which has got me really excited. They specifically ask, during the last 2 weeks, how many times have you driven a car, truck or motor vehicle after smoking marijuana, using other illicit drugs? And they've got some valuable data from trends over time, and there was a nice paper that just came out very recently, looked from 2001 to 2008, and the driving after using marijuana in the past 2 weeks declined. But then an interesting thing is from 2001, it's actually starting to increase. The trouble is, no state-level data. It's designed as a national survey, and that's what its purpose was. But in terms of looking at this law, we want to get at our state-level data so that we can look at this. And this is the typical kind of thing you see. You see dramatic variation, and that's why it's so important when evaluating these laws also, because there's wide variation in use in the community. It changes over time. Irregardless of the law. This has nothing to do with the law. This is regarded a whole lot of just general changes that take place. Then the issue that SAMHSA uses, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, to monitor drug use. And this is the much larger. This gets all ages rather than just high school seniors. And they ask specific questions. During the past 12 months, have you driven while you are under the influence of a combination of alcohol and illegal drugs, which is great, alcohol only, and then illegal drugs only. However, they don't specifically identify marijuana, and that's the largest single drug that's involved. And they generate state estimates, and I spent ages combing their website trying to come up with some data, and then suddenly the other day when I went back to look again, they've just produced a new report where they actually are looking at drugs driving, and I'll show you some information on that. The interesting thing is this comparison of drugs with alcohol. This is looking at the percentage of persons aged 16 and over driving under the influence of illicit drugs compared to alcohol. And as you can see, the states are not the same states. It's not the same problem. There are differences in drug use by state and differences in alcohol use by state. And red are the hot ones where there's a large prevalence of driving under the influence of the substance, and the blue ones is the low prevalence, and they're by no means the same states. And so that was a great report that I was able to include. It's only recently just come out. So this is really, and for this study that they did, they looked at all persons 16 and over, driving age, and they had to combine 4 years' worth of data. And 4.3% reported driving under the influence of illicit drugs in the past year, and 13% reported driving under the influence of alcohol in the past year. There's huge variation by state, so this is what you're looking for in your laws and your evaluation. You're getting highest rates in Rhode Island and Vermont and lowest in Iowa. Big differences in reporting the same survey administered in the states. And also the drunk driving. The trouble is, though, how are we going to... Alex is looking for these multiple points, magic points, ideally every month, every week. But here, you're probably going to have to combine 3 or 4 years' worth of data to be able to get these estimates, and so it's going to be much more difficult to do. So I concluded you couldn't do them, couldn't use it. So then what about actual drug levels? As an epidemiologist, I want to actually have measurable levels and can actually measure these things. The National Roadside Survey, really, this was the first major survey looking at nighttime weekend drivers. And the interesting thing is more people tested positive for drugs than alcohol. And 8.6% of the drivers were positive for marijuana. There's a new 2013 survey underway, and there was another survey when they're doing the pilot for this in California recently. So you're able to get a couple of data points in California, but we really don't. It's a national sample. It's not state-based, and so we can't look at that, use that to evaluate trends. Injured drivers. I work out of a trauma, do some research out of a trauma centre, and it would be lovely if we had, like we do for alcohol, serial measures of marijuana involvement. We don't have that. Coming to FARS, which has been the major policy data source we've really used a lot for that. However, the big problem there is the testing rates for any drugs varies widely by states. And I'll show you something. And there's no uniform testing on what drugs they test for. It's a real hodgepodge, as I'll briefly go through. So the drug testing rates by far varies widely. This is the same thing looking at state variation.
I just have to read it myself, yeah.
The darkest ones are more than 80% are tested for drugs. And as you can see, there's been some improvement from 2005 to 2009. Good, two more minutes. Good, perfect timing. And this huge variation in testing rates means that we've got many states with very poor testing rates. And the issue with the alcohol, and one of the reasons we could still look at state data, is that you still had some reasonable testing, even if it was 60%, and we developed these multiple imputation methods to be able to do this. But here we have very different drugs. Some drugs, you have marijuana, you have the opiate derivative drugs, and it's much more difficult to even think about how we might do some multiple imputations of this to try and do that. Also very interesting, the prevalence of drug use was much higher in the daytime than actually at nighttime, and in some of the surveys as well. So one of the things that I took a look at as part of this was there are 15 states that have drug for sale laws. And this is essentially, this was the big revelation in drunk driving law, is you didn't have to prove that someone was impaired, they just had to have a blood alcohol level above 0.08. And that was the basis for 0.10, and we keep bringing it down. But it's an offence to drive while you're impaired. And the actual specific drugs varies widely by states. And so I took a look at, could we use FARS to evaluate these drug per se laws? And my preliminary analysis of this, out of all of the states and those with per se laws, only three states had drug per se laws and reliable THC testing. And this is just showing you some of the differences in the testing between the states. And essentially, in Illinois, they passed an effective, you can see here the date, effective date of the law, and then you can see the percent of people who tested positive for marijuana. So we could potentially do some evaluation in these states, but if you really get down to look at it, this is my next slide, the FARS and drug testing, there's some serious issues with regard to FARS and the whole ability to do that, and time's up. Essentially, for the historical data on marijuana is inconsistent. The five drug tested in more than 75% of driver fatalities. The big thing about FARS for marijuana is it looks at the metabolites, it combines them all as cannabinoids. So basically, Marilyn Hirsis does these fascinating studies where she brings in chronic marijuana users, puts them in a locked ward for 3 weeks, and they still turn metabolites positive out of the urine test. And so FARS does not distinguish by whether it's active drug or not active drug. And my last slide is the conclusions. So several surveys have assessed marijuana use, but either not in relationship to driving or we don't have state-level data. And so obviously my push is that we should be getting marijuana and driving specifically in survey questions. We need to think more about conducting roadside surveys such as they've been doing in California and when these laws come in, start being passed. We don't have any data from hospitalised. We have serious issues with regard to drug testing and FARS, and I think we need to work at trying to develop a core group of states that we could use to monitor some of these trends. And the major real barrier in this whole thing is the cost of doing it. We're testing some folks coming into our trauma centre, and about $100 a person to test. It's a whole different issue to alcohol. Much more expensive. Alcohol, you just do a breathalyzer, it costs about a dollar or so to test. We're talking $100 a shot on this thing. So very different issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Gordon. You know, we give out money at PHLR, aside from selling books. And we have an annual call for proposals, as Paul alluded to. And so if you're thinking of getting research ideas as you go through this, look for our next call for proposals in January. But the truth is, we can't fund that much. Right? What Gordon is talking about is the need for an investment, a significant investment from NIH, and other relevant groups in this kind of research. That's not the direction things are going.
This is just what a $2 million plus contract for roadside surveys in Colorado and Washington. Hopefully.
So this is, you know, this is the kind of stuff we're going to need more of. But it also points to a point Alex made, which is the time resolution. You know, I just want to emphasize the fact that I will take on anybody on the proposition that research doesn't influence policy. Research influences policy. It doesn't often, that doesn't mean that you can take a study to a legislator and change their mind and have them introduce a bill that day. It does mean that if you look at a time resolution of 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you see policy in lots of areas coming into line with research. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. This is not about what we're going to have in medical marijuana laws next year alone, although we hope people will make some good guesses about the kind of laws we need based on what we know now. It's really about knowing that marijuana is here to stay. There are issues about marijuana and driving, and we need to spend the time and money and invest the research resources into guiding us so that we're in the right place 20 years from now. And now our last speaker, Carrie Lowry, will be talking again about concussions.